Shalom Aleichem, Chevra, it's Binyamin Hammer here at the National Council of Young Israel. Happy to welcome Rebbe and all the Rabbanim for conference call number 109. Thank you, Rebbe.
You're very welcome. Question one. In the Cohen Modern Orthodox Middle and High School where I teach, students will often sit in shul during tefillah with siddurim in hand while saying few, if any, of the words from the siddur. Sometimes students will describe their behavior as spacing out. As their focus drifts off, as it were. Sometimes students will admit they are simply not interested in davening. Shulchan Aruch and Mishneh Berurah 108.7 seem to be clear in noting that not saying the words of tefillah is mazed, such that no tashlumen is permitted. This being said, students do sometimes voice regret for having not davened in one instance or another. Are there any grounds to allow a student who had spaced out the chakras, for example, to do tashlumen at mincha? Given teenagers' short attention spans and unpredictable behavior, is there any cooler to call any of these instances of not davening shogeg rather than mazed? In theory, yes. However, if a guy can't daven once, he's going to daven twice? I don't think we should look for this, quote, cooler. It reminds me of what the Shulchan Aruch says, that, if a person did not have kavana in the first bracha of Shmon Esrei, so you have to daven over a second time. That's just a din mefurish. Din mefurish. Okay? Lo kimen biyavas, yachad of yispal, simen kuf aleph, sif aleph. Says the Ramah, no, you're going to blow it the second time also. So why do it a second time? Here too, why are we giving him a cooler to daven a second time? Let him focus on the mincha without the tashlumen. Once is more than enough for a fellow like this. In general, the Shulchan Aruch writes in Simen Aleph, Siv Dalet Tov Ma'azah Kavana, Behar B'Shalom B'Kavana. You tell me he can't focus so much. So that's a question of shortening the davening for this fellow. So I believe that in a Shas Adchach, such as these kind of individuals, he can shorten the davening to the bare bones. And what's the bare bones? You have to say the brachas in the morning, from the very beginning of the brachas, wherever you start the brachas from until the very end of the brachas. It takes a few minutes. I think in 4 minutes, it can be done without a problem. And then, I believe in such a circumstance, obviously not regular circumstance, you can rely on the poskim who say, look at the Mishneh Berurah, Simen Nun Aleph, Sivkot and Beis, that with Sukkah de Zimra, the brachas are not Medina de Gemara. That's what the Shulchan Aruch and Simen Nun Beis Sif Aleph allows you to skip the Psukah de Zimra to catch Shvila B'Tzibur. That's the Pashup Shad is that way. So skip the whole thing. So tell him to come to Shul. He can't focus for so long. Let him start from Yotzer Or. Yotzer Or could take him another 5 minutes, Birchus Kriyashma, 5-6 minutes. And let him say Shemon Esrei for 5-6 minutes. Just slowly, every word. So the whole davening can be done 10-15 minutes, the whole thing. Skipping Op Sukkah Dezimri, skipping whatever comes after Shemon Esrei. Can't focus that long. Tov Ma'azah Kavana. If you want to say the brachas then, be another 3-4 minutes. The whole thing can take a very short amount of time. 15 minutes, the whole thing is done. And again, if you want to say brachas at home in the morning, which is even better, so the whole davening is even less, shorter than that. I'd rather him do that than space out the whole time. Tell the guy, this is not for everybody. But for you, if you're going to space out, I'll make a very, very shortened version of davening. Please try to focus on this shortened version. That's what I would suggest. Two, towels get delivered to the mikveh from this cleaner sealed in plastic bags. Can the bags be torn open on Shabbos to remove towels? Or if not, all the towels will be taken out of the pack at one time. I believe it's permissible to open the plastic bag based on the Shulchan Aruch and Simon Shin Yudal Sifches by Chol Solos. Rav Moshe's Shuvas about this and other poskim. These are bags are considered secondary to their content, and therefore they don't have a status of an independent kli. You can rip them open. No Easter of Korea, no Easter of Soser, so it's permissible. Three, can a combination lock that use the wheels combination used on Shabbos or is a problem of Ksiva like Scrabble? Is there a problem if it's only numbers? Is there a problem with wheels spelled out a word? Or if the lock is a combination of numbers and letters and spells out a license plate? Combination spells a word or phrase? I believe the whole assumption is wrong. Scrabble is also not a problem of Ksiva. Maybe the questioner means they call it deluxe Scrabble. Deluxe Scrabble is where it fits into a framework, and it's arguable that the combination locks like of this type have a framework. In my opinion, the Lux gravel is also mutter. It's also mutter. The nature of ksiva, you didn't write anything. What did you do? You put one letter next to another letter. One letter next to another letter in abstract is not a problem. The only time I believe it's a problem, you're putting one letter next to another to create a word, is if the two letters are then put on a joint background. For example, they have these shuls, have these kinds of schedules in front of them. It comes from the Goyim Nebuch. You know, it tells you that we'll pray at a certain time and the speech will be on this topic. And you take these white little letters, you put them into a crevice in the black background. That's a problem, in my opinion. That is a problem. But here, the background is there already. Like the Lux Scrabble. The A is on the background. The B is on the background. If you put the A next to the B, that's not a problem at all, even if it is in a framework. And the same thing is true over here. All these situations, the letters and numbers are all on a background of sorts. Put in there one another, it's not a problem. I think it's all mutter. Four. If a shul does not have 10 men at the start of Sukkot Zimra, but gets a minyan in the middle of Sukkot Zimra, can they say Kaddish Zen? Whether they can or not is a very fascinating question, but the minig is not that way. The minig is that you don't have a minyan at the beginning of Sukkot Zimra. There's no Kaddish, because remember, those Kaddishim, those are what we call a Kaddish Yosem. So the Yosem would say a Kaddish at the end, by Oleinu and Shir Shoyom. It's not the intrinsic part of the Tefillah. And therefore, it's not customary to stop the Pesukah de Zimra to say Kaddish. Even though what I just told you now, the Pesukah de Zimra is not Medina de Gemara. So therefore, there's much more reason to be lenient and have Sekin. For example, many Poskim say that in the middle of Pesukah de Zimra, you're hearing a Kaddish, you're behind, you're ahead. They say you shouldn't answer whatever's not Medina de Gemara. Even the Pesukah de Zimra is also not Medina de Gemara. So they say you shouldn't answer Brichu, shouldn't answer the last two amens of Kaddish, because the part after Tamir and Be'omah is not Medina de Gemara. So it's not it's customary that we do not say Kaddish in the middle of Pesukah de Zimra. Five, can girls come up with Kol Hanorim? If yes, until what age can they say Bracha along with the boys? If not, how does the Rav suggest should we handle part of the Kol Hanorim and the girls come up? I don't know what's going on. Kol Hanorim is you don't say a Bracha. And I said, an Arshul, anyone can say a Bracha, any boy you can say a Bracha, comes up and says the Bracha by himself. And then we bring up Kol Hanorim who do not know how to say the Bracha by themselves. And they go under a talus, as the term Kol Hanorim clearly connotes. It's Na'arim, not Na'aros. It's meant for boys, the same as only boys got aliyahs. Only men got aliyahs in traditional shuls. Only boys got aliyahs if they're able to say the words by themselves, not girls. And so too, Kol Hanorim is also for boys and not girls. If a girl does come up, so then that's a whole different story. You can't embarrass anybody, chas v'sholem. Can't embarrass her, chas v'cholila. You tell the parents, for next year, it's not our custom. Same as she would not get an aliyah when she's 12 years old, at least in shuls that we're talking about. So she shouldn't get an aliyah when she's 10 years old, when she knows how to make it. And she shouldn't get an aliyah, go on the call now when she's 2 years old. That's what I think it should be done. Six, many people in my shul are children of Holocaust survivors. For some, their father remarried after the war, after having lost the wife and children. They tend not to refer to the children of their father's pre-war family with any sibling sense of connection. My father had a family, as opposed to before I was born, I lost siblings. Is this the correct approach, both on halacha, yahrzeit naming after, and hashkafa? If not, what can be done so many years later? It seems to me that these Holocaust survivors intended to protect their children, their second family, from having a life of terrible sadness, which was the prevailing mood. If you imagine losing a whole family and starting all over again, it's just what the horrors they went through themselves. Incredible. Mind-boggling horrors. They try to protect their children. There are many stories of people who grew up, their parents didn't talk about it, and they would hear their parents wake up in the middle of the night and having nightmares, reliving their horrific experiences that we can't even begin to understand them. So many of them didn't talk about it. As a matter of fact, someone once told me that until they were of advanced age, they had no idea that the father was married before the war and had children. He never told them. Didn't want to tell the children. He wanted to protect them, to live a normal life like everybody else. I believe that was the sentiment, I think probably a correct sentiment at that time, when these children of Holocaust survivors were growing up in their youth. Now that they have matured, now children of Holocaust survivors are now 50 years old or older. So the world has changed, I think, at this point in time. Yes, it is appropriate to say you lost a sibling and to name after that sibling and to keep a yard site for that sibling if it's known. Or if it's not, they have the Yom Kaddish HaKloli on Asar Batavis, as the Rebbe Nodeman have, or some other marking, just to mention it in Yitzchak, as the case may be. It's important to maintain these ideas. In other words, this Holocaust survivor's child, he's talking about basically a sibling, right? By now, we're talking about his children, we're talking about an uncle. That's what we're really talking about for the people who are younger now. My mother came to this country before the war. She left behind three siblings who will perish with all their families. So, we have, family has people named after all of them in the family, my immediate family and one of my children, because you want to preserve their memory for posterity. Again, it's not exactly the same as what's being described here of a second marriage after a first. It's a little different, of course, but the principle is the same. And I think that we should not look down at those who were hiding it from their children. They wanted to protect their children. They were probably right. But now, all these years later, I think it's the same families can, perhaps, probably even should, both halakhically and hashkafically, commemorate those who unfortunately perished during the Holocaust. 7, administrator of the yeshiva day school needed to leave a job in mid-year due to health reasons. The contract does not spell out anything about a severance package. The school has agreed to continue the tuition arrangement, which included as a fringe benefit, till the end of the current school year. Is the administrator entitled to any other severance pay, Chodesh Hashanah, or any other term it could be called? If the administrator had stayed on the job, there is no doubt in my mind that the school board would fire this administrator because he is not capable of doing the job properly now due to health reasons. The fact that the administrator left should not be held against him now. What that seems to be assuming, if they fired him, he'd be entitled, and if he's resigning, he's not entitled. I'm not sure either of those assumptions is correct. Hakol kiminik ha-mokom. Depends what this yeshiva has as a precedent. Cholosh Hashanah is not found in Shulchan Aruch. It's not found anywhere. If you really want to know, it comes from the socialist government in Israel, which all-powerful Histadrut enacted Cholosh Hashanah. So the Batei Din said that's the Minhag HaMedina in the Holy Land, so it applies to Batei Din as well. In this country, there's no such thing as Cholosh Hashanah in the labor force as such, to my knowledge. And I don't think my Bezin necessarily has to give a Cholosh Hashanah for any kind of a worker. And why an administrator in a yeshiva day school is different than any other worker in any other job, I don't understand it. I am fully aware of the fact that Torah Mesorah is in favor of Cholosh Hashanah. I'm also in favor of Cholosh Hashanah if the school can afford it. It's a great thing. However, I don't think it's automatically assumed to be the case. It all depends upon the precedent in that particular school. If they had situations in the past where they gave Kodesh Hashanah, then the person can say, listen, that's the minhag in this school, and I'm entitled to it. And he probably is correct. If they don't, they don't. It's come to the point where some schools feel compelled to put in their contract, there's no Kodesh Hashanah. There's no Kodesh Hashanah. The truth is that the Chofetz Chaim would be happy with them. Chofetz Chaim says so many fights ensue because people don't put things in. It's uncomfortable to write certain things in a contract, but it's much more uncomfortable to fight about it later on. So in any event, I think that it's not automatic. It depends upon every school individually. And therefore, he's not being held against him now. It just, not that he was entitled to it before not talented with that. It just depends on the minhag in that particular school. Should the school offer some kind of severance package? Absolutely. We call that a hanukkah. Hanuk, tanuk, lo. He should give a tip. How much that hanukkah should be? We can look at the Gemara. How much the hanukkah was in time of the avodim described in the Chumash. Not all that much money. Every situation, again, is different. Depends to a large extent on the financial situation of the school and of the administrator. We call these things are based upon the, you know, I see say Yoshev HaTov. Yoshev HaTov does take into account, as opposed to strict din, the financial situation of the various parties. That means the school and the administrator. Could be the school is dead broke, administrator is rich. Could be the administrator is dead broke and the school is rich. You know, and that would have different outcomes as far as what's the Yoshev HaTov. The income of the family is obviously very negatively impacted now as the administrator is currently unable to work. If it makes any difference, the administrator have been working for 5 years at this school. Of course you should try to treat him properly. It all depends on the circumstances. 8. What is the proper way to celebrate mark a bas mitzvah? Why is there no bracha, baruch shatarani, and a girl turning bas mitzvah? We'll try to answer B before A. Why is there no baruch shatarani? That's a good question. The Prima Gadim asked this question. It's not a new question. Prima Gadim asked this question where this baruch shatarani is found in the Aruch Chaim. It's found in Aruch Chaim. In Siman Reish Kafesiv Beis, the Rambam quotes this idea of Baruch Shem Tarani, and Prima Gadim asks, why not buy a daughter? Why not buy a daughter? After all, the Levush understands Baruch Shem Tarani that the children are punished because of the father's sins, no difference if she's a boy or a girl, and it's called in the Magen Avraham, the other way around, that the parent is punished for the child's sins, it should still make no difference because we assume there is a chiyuv of chinuch as far as daughters are concerned. That's a question. Very good question. Here's another question for you, Megadim. Why should the mother say Baruch Shem Tarani when her son turns bar mitzvah? These are all very good questions. The Primogodim's answers are not that compelling. You can look it up yourself in Simon Reish Chafe, Eishel Avraham, So I had a different pshat in Baruch Shem Tarani, which answers these questions. My pshat is based upon the Rambam, the very first halacha of Hilchos Talmud Torah. Noshim avonim muktanim pturim mitalmud Torah. Avo koton oviv chayav olam do Torah shenema v'limatem osim spenechem. Very strange Rambam. Starts off on the left foot. Who's potter? Not the Rambam is a very number one expositor of halacha in history. Why are you starting off on the left foot? Why? And what about if he turns 13? Ram says, I'm a cotton of a chayolam the Torah. What about if he's 14 and no obligation? I think the two questions answer one another. The chiv of a limatim osim espenechem can only apply to a ben who does not have his own personal obligation. If he's obligated, the child, the son, then the father, by definition, is not obligated. It's true that after a person turns 13, a father has to take care of his son. No question. You have to teach him Torah about Peh, teach him to be a mensch. But if you look at the Gemara and Kiddushin and the Shulchan Aruch Hilchos Talmud Torah, for the matam osus b'necha b'daber b'am refers to Torah shebichsav, and that's an obligation of every father till 13. Because until 13, the son does not have his own obligation. That's why the Rambam had to start off with the fact that he's exempt himself. That makes it possible to have the obligation. Once he turns 13, he has his own obligation, and the father is relieved from the
Chaver, bear with us. I'm not sure what happens here. Just hang in there 1 second, please. Ever hang in once I'm trying to reach Rabbi Willie. Ever hang in there, please. I'm trying.
I apologize. My phone seems to have misfunctioned. Do you hear me now? I hope
yes,
so.
Yes, Rebbe, we hear you. I apologize as I try to reach Rebbe. Okay.
I apologize. So I was trying to say that, of course, a father must take care of his child after 13, but the technical mitzvah of Limata Moses Menachem is limited to a cotton, that the Rambam seems to say, and that's why I have a noob shot in Baruch Shem Tarani based on the source. The source of Medrash Rabbah, Parshas Toldos, Vayigdalu Anorim, 13 years, they go to the Beis HaSefer, they come back from Beis HaSefer, after 13, he goes to the Beis Medrash, Yaakov, goes to Avodah Zarah, Esav, Sarech Adam Li Taba B'Noach Yigim Ushana, Mikan Ve'elech Omer Baruch Shem Tarani. What do you see? It's teaching Torah. Says he goes to Beis HaSefer. Going to Beis HaSefer. If you succeed in taking care of your child, the son will continue after 13 on his own. So goes to Beis Medrash. When a person has a son who becomes bar mitzvah, Baruch Shem Tarani Me'Ocho Shoseh, the ownership of the bittul mitzvahs for the matzah mitzvahs b'nechem. Now he's putting from that. If you look on the Radal and the Medrash, he says something along those lines. Now we understand the premier God's kashas are no kashas, because the chiyuv of lamed Torah is only from a father to a son. Both a mother and a daughter are not included. The Gemara has in Masech the Kiddushin. This explains why the minig is say Baruch Shem Tarani when the son gets an aliyah la Torah. What's the connection according to the Levush and Magen Avraham? According to this understanding, it's beautiful. The boy gets an aliyah, and it's certainly the time of the Gemara meant you have actually read yourself from the Sefer Torah, indicating you've mastered how to read Torah Shebichsav. And once you've done that, it's an indication that the father has successfully discharged his obligation of the Limata Moses Benechem, and therefore he makes a Baruch Shem Tarani. That's why it's done only for a boy and not a girl talking about bas mitzvah. Now I go to the first part of the question. What's the proper way to celebrate Mark of bas mitzvah? Well, here's a big fight between the Gedolim of the last generation. The Maharshal, the Yamshel Shlomo, tells us what bas mitzvah is about. It's in Baba Kama, Daf Pevov, Pezayin rather, that Rabbi Yossi, if it was blind, said, if someone tells me that I'm a blind person, chayv mitzvah, I make a yomtiv. Go to Mitzvah V'yoseh. Says in my Yamshel Shlomo there, he was already chayv. He just made a yomtiv on the besura that he was chayv. Kal v'chomer, in time bar mitzvah, so you have to make a yomtiv. The Machta Shekel quotes this on that Magen Avraham. Oh. However, the Magen Avraham doesn't quite say that. His Lashon Magen Avraham there in Sifkot and Dalet is, Mitzvah la'odam la'atav suda b'yom shenatzadu ha'mitzvah ki yom shenichas l'chuppah. Wait a minute. Who's the obligation upon? On the father, as the Magen Avraham would have it, or as the son, as the Mashal would have it? I believe that they're both true. So, the son has an obligation of Gadol B'tzuva V'yoseh. The father's obligation, like by a chuppah. What's by a chuppah? What's that all about? So the Gemara in Kiddushin Chavtes says that a father has obligations, l'mulo, l'ftoso, l'olam do toro, l'asiyo, ish, l'am domnus. When it comes to a bris, there's a suda. When it comes to pidyon haben, there's a suda. When it comes to a wedding, there's a suda. So therefore, l'olam do toro is also a suda. When is that suda celebrated? When you finish with the Matzah Moses Benechem, that's a bar mitzvah. It seems to me, therefore, that obligation is limited to a father to a son, because the father has this unique obligation to teach the Torah Shebichsav to a son until he turns 13. Same as this unique obligation for Milan and Pidyon HaBen and Lasi Yerisha. And therefore, when every stage is accomplished, it calls for a suuda. Not apply to a young lady. However, the young lady herself has an obligation. Good, right? Mitzuvah v'yosah is also a high level. This, in fact, was a dispute between the Gedolim of the past generation. Rabbi Avadia Yosef has in Yochav Adas that there's no difference whatsoever between a boy and a girl because Gadol Mitzvah V'Yolse, Chelik Beis, Simen Chav Tes. He's responding to Rabbi Moshe. Rabbi Moshe has an Orach Chaim, Chelik Aleph Simen Kuv Dalet. Nah, it's a birthday party. They asked him this question in Chelik Beis, Simen Tzadi Zayin, but Mitzvah V'Yolse. So he answered, well, by a boy you can tell he counts to a minion. Girl, you really can't tell. What can I say? Rav Yosef, you can tell because they gave him to make a bracha to be mostly other people. Chav Adas doesn't understand that. There's no source for this. No source. We don't see a source. Seems to me that we can make a middle position between these two gedolim. According to Rav Moshe, it's nothing. According to Rav Avadia Yosef, it's the same as a bar mitzvah. And we're saying, no. Bar mitzvah has two components. The component of the Magen Avraham does not exist. That's only when you reach a stage of the Mulo Liftoso Lassia Wisha Lamda Torah. Fine. But the other idea of the Marashal does exist. What's the difference? Who's making the Suda? It makes all the difference. If the father makes the Suda, he makes it like a wedding, as the Magen Avraham said, right, to his friends and neighbors and relatives. If the girl is making the Suda, she invites her friends. She's not interested in her father's friends, her close relatives, not interested in their extended family. And the nature of the celebration is also different. If a boy's about mitzvah like a wedding, you have to serve a fancier menu. If it's a girl, what 12-year-old kids like to eat? You know, pizza, frankfurters, whatever. Because she wouldn't pass at a fancy catered affair for a wedding or bar mitzvah. That's what we did when our daughter turned 12. We made them actually two parties. We made them something around our own dining room table for the close family. And then we made something in school or in shul for their friends, as opposed to a bar mitzvah, which is more like a wedding, which would really make weddings more like bar mitzvahs, but that's for a different discussion. 9. Can a woman go swimming in a public pool that will likely have men and women swimming at the same time? The woman is fully covered in a sneer's swimsuit. The pool is indoors and is used as an exercise pool, meaning people are not lounging around or using it as recreation. It seems to me, by definition, a public co-ed pool, by definition, is a mokom porutz, because everyone else is swimming without being clothed appropriately. Even though this particular woman is clothed appropriately, doesn't matter. She should not be there in a mokom porutz. And even if she's wearing her swim clothes, she should not go there. And it's a very serious matter. Terrible things have happened around swimming pools. For those who know, it's not a good place to be in a co-ed swimming pool, no matter how you're dressed. And therefore, it should be avoided. Question number 10. Many crock pots are sold with blech. When one is cooking on Friday, must they remove the blech until it finishes cooking, or else will be considered the standard way to cook? Shvus Yitzchok B'Shem Rav Shlomo Zalman Daf Kuv Dal. Unfortunately, I don't have that safe. I have other Shvus Yitzchok, a terrific svarim. This one I don't have. But of course, in principle, he's correct that whatever is done in a normal fashion doesn't count. Can't possibly count to be a heker if you cook that way. That's an important point. There is a Chazon Ish doesn't like blechs at all, and they bring the raya from the first Bialoch in Reish and Gimel. I don't think it's a good raya for that very reason. It all depends on what's normal. Whatever's normal does not count as a heker, but a blech that's not normal does count as a heker. But it has to be something which is not used when you're cooking. I think that in principle is correct. However, I don't fully understand the question, because at first glance, there's very little nafkamina. Why? For Shehiyah, to leave it on from before Shabbos, you don't need a blech, as long as it's a special kamacha ben rusoi, called the Amidah like the Ramah, so you don't need a blech. To put it back into the crock pot, in my view, you can't do that at all, because it's a question of hachzara le-tocho, which is according to the Gemara and the Shulchan Aruch in Reish and Gimel Siv Beis, is not allowed, even if there would be a blech of some sort. So I don't see exactly. I also have never seen this kind of a crock pot. If someone sends me a picture, perhaps there'll be a more clear answer or a picture of the Shavuos Yitzchak on that page. Question number 11. Someone had the chilling pot on the black on the wrong burner, not the one with the fire on. He said the area where the pot was on wasn't hot and the chilling wasn't cooked when Shabbos started. He had come late to shul on Friday night and had already known by the time he came to shul after Shkia. Shabbos morning, he said that by the time he came home from the shul, his child had turned on the correct fire. Is he allowed to eat the cholent? Doesn't matter how much after Shkia this was done. B. Until when could he have gotten the Gentile to turn on the fire? C. From the Shabbos and Bishul Akam perspective, it would be better for the Gentile to slide the pot to the burner with the fire on or to turn on the fire under the pot? All good questions. I do not believe we should have any anah for what a child does on Shabbos. Goy is a derabon, and a child is a daraisa. Ato bincha. Bincha means a child under bar mitzvah. And I would say it's certainly not have any anah, both from the technical perspective and from the chinuch perspective. Can you imagine that he said, oh, daddy's happy as child, he'll do it again next week. And it would be a terrible precedent. So that's out. As far as the nachri is concerned, yeah, ben hashmashet we can be mekel, about a half an hour after the shkia we can be mekel, ben hashmashet. And from both perspectives, it's better to slide the pot over, because by sliding the pot over, you're not being over on an Easter of Havara, right? Bishul is going to be either way, not Easter Havara. And moreover, there's no Bishul Akka problem if the Jew had lit the fire. So from both perspectives, that's a better option. The guy should slide and not make a new fire. Question number 12. For received a package on Shabbos, which is not muktzah, may he use the item because of Amir Damir Akum? If yes, can we say it's Savad Rabbanu Nekula that came from within the Tchum? Very good question. Amir Damir is not exactly the relevant point over here. Much more relevant is the fact that the Malacha, which was done by the delivery person, was not done for the recipient in most cases, but was done for the person who was sending him to, let's say, drive the truck. The recipient didn't hire the guy to drive the truck. Some company that's sending it is hiring that fellow. And more than that, what the guy is doing by driving a truck is not for this particular Jewish recipient. There are many, not presumably, in most places, I know some very intensely Orthodox or Jewish communities may not be the case, but in most situations, there's at least one Nachri living somewhere near where the Yisrael is living, and therefore, it can be assumed that the truck is coming to within walking distance of the Yisrael who received the package. So, as far as he's concerned, the guy could have driven to the delivery person could have driven to the guy's house and walked from there to his house and given him, especially as an Eruv. So, therefore, I do not believe that the driving of the truck is a problem. Now, the Tchum issue is a more complex issue. Savad Rabbanu Nekula depends upon what is in the package. If it's a food item, we would not apply it, Pashtus, because it's a Dava Shesh Lamatirin. Why have it now? Have it tomorrow. If it's another item, which is implied by the question, an item, usually doesn't mean food, an item, you can use it repeatedly. If you use it repeatedly, it's Slach Rice and Beit Zadav Dalin. It's not considered Yesh Lamatirin, because you can use it now and use it again later. In addition, the Mishnah Berurah says in Simon Shin Zion and the Sivkot Nun Hei, as I told you before, when it comes to an Igeres, a letter, no, there's no Easter Anah, because you don't know who sent it to you. Moreover, there's no real Anah, because it was only transferred from one place to another. The Sharatian Korset over there, Sivkot Samach Gimel, from the Magen Avraham, Tav Kuf Tezvav. The Bialacha, Shinid Chesif Aleph, the Machal Achaz quotes a symbol that's from the Chayodim. And everyone agrees, it's true. Some say it doesn't matter, there's no change to the Chayodim itself, just change location. Still a problem. Still a problem. Reb Kivega, on that Magen Avraham, and Tav Kuf Tezvav, Sivkot Vav, says that he's doing the work for the person who's paying him. The person who's paying him is somebody else. And therefore, there's room to be lenient. Now, the svara of the Mishnah Brura, you don't know who's sending it. That might not work in some of these cases, because in these cases, it's not just a stranger walks in with a letter, which you didn't quote order. Here you ordered it, and it's coming on Amazon. Well, you should not be ordering it to come on Shabbos. And if it happens to come on Shabbos, I believe it's permissible based on these considerations. 13, is it also Messiah condition that a wedding with non-kosher food will be served? Absolutely awesome. Terrible thing to do. 14, a woman saw 3 months in a row after day 30. She required to keep Yom HaKosher on the basis. In my opinion, the answer to that question is no. Based on the Mechaber, Simon Kuf, Pei, Rav, Siv, Gimel, and Yerodeya, that if a person never sees less than 26 days, in effect, then before that she has the status of Isha Sheyeshla Veses. Who holds this way? The Sidre Tara, Kuf, Pei, Tes, and the Siv Katan. Chaf, the Rishba seems to say so, needed after Tetzvav, Lamed, Aleph. This is against the Bali HaShulchan, who says that the context of that Mechaber is only to pater from a Bediga Kodem Tashmish. But there is no such thing as a negative Vesus. The Pasha Pshat and the Rishonim and the Post, but there is such a thing as a negative Vesus. 3 times in a row she didn't see any, she saw at least 32 days later. So there's no need, in my opinion, to check on a Yom HaKodesh or on a Benet. 15. A woman was standing on the 7th day and received a Psak, that she can go to the mikveh and not to look at the Tashmish. If the Tashmish she saw Dam on the bedsheet, which was Tzivonim, are they still Mutter? In my opinion, the Psak is wrong. The Psak she got is wrong. It's a wrong Psak. Because a woman who's seeing standing on the 7th day, even if she can go to the mikveh, which perhaps she can do if she can get a clean bedikah, she should not be with her husband that night, because the fact that it was standing on that day indicates that it's standing often is a precursor of bleeding. Look in this Gemara Masechta Nida. The Gemara says that if there's some kind of a re'iyah, which in and of itself is not make her a Nida, but it's a precursor of things to come. It has a status of what we'll call a Yom HaVeses, and therefore there's an Easter of Tashmish. It seems to me that's probably the main type of Easter of Veses. If you look on the Gemara over here in Samach Gimel Amud Beis, the top line, Shofar Dam Tamei Mitoch Dam Tor. Rashi says, Regil Liros Dam Tor Tchila V'Chakach Dam Tamei. So it's a Veses. The Poskim says so, Rabbi Vadya has it, Rabbi Vozna has it. You see, she's brown, but this brown leads to red. We don't want all this to happen. So once she sees brown, she should not be with her husband. So she sees red on the 7th day. It's the wrong time to have Tashmash. Even if she's permitted to go to the mikveh, she should wait till things clear. So I have to say that I don't think the Psak was correct. Now, post facto, b'di'evet. So, did the man check himself? If he checked himself, he saw nothing. There's room to be lenient. Very likely that whatever standing came out of her after they were together, and therefore it has the status of a kesem on a davar tzivoni. If he didn't look, it's more complicated. She was told not to look. Maybe he was also not to look. If you look in the Sidrei Tara, in Siman Kuf Tzadi, end of Sidkot Lamed Vav, he's afraid of her hagosha daraisa. Some of the rabbanos know hagosha, but after Tashmish, Dilma Agosha, that consideration seems to me we can be more of a make-along. Bismar Azeh, women have no real hargosha, so the only hargosha I think we really approve of, and we consider to be proper hargosha today, is what's called kedarka, kederech riyosa. It's based on a Rashba in the Masech Tanida, in the Chidush Iran, kedarka, and that does not apply in this chash, even though there was tashmash in between. So that itself, the Sidrei Tara, to me, is not as problematic as the mere fact that he may have seen it himself. If he sees it himself, then for sure they are prohibited. And, you know, sometimes you're not supposed to look, but sometimes that's dangerous not to look. So we'd have to depend on the other particular circumstances of the case for giving an answer to such a difficult shiloh. 16. Woman saw dam in the bathtub more than it could grist in the water. Maya makabel tuma? Question mark. It could be it's not makabel tuma at all. It's called tuma tzofa. They quote from the Yeshua's Yaakov. I saw a quote in the Mishmeres HaTahara, Rabbi Karp, Shlita, on page Pei Dalad. It's some achloikis. It can be mekel b'shas atzchak. Some of the hokel, Rabbi Vadya, in Taras Abayis, it's mekel b'shalo b'shas atzchak, because it's makabel tuma on the Rabbana. So there's room to be mekel on these shalos. 17. I find a fly in my hot soup. There's a fact that it's no sin time lefgam. Give me a blanket heter to eat the soup after throwing out the fly. The heter of time lefgam merely lower the bitter requirements of shishim to rove. Who cares? There's more soup than there is a fly. So either way, it's okay. 18. Does what is considered time lefgam change depending on the generation? It's apparent from the Shulchan Aruch that sometimes the flies, the worms, used to taste good to people. Since nowadays nobody would want the taste of a worm, can we safely say that all these creatures are no sound of gam? B, no sound of gam can change depending on the time, also change depending on the place. Meaning, what if a creature is found to be repulsive in America, but they enjoy eating it in China? Is it considered sound of gam in America, but shvach in China? These questions are, I haven't seen Beferish in post, because I thought the answer to both questions is yes. Depends upon the time, depends upon the place. But I haven't seen it in the postcard. Question number 19. Is there any marker for leaving chumashim or anything else in Aron Kodesh when taking all Torahs out for Akobas on Torah, Simchas Torah, or for Shana, Shana Rabbah? I don't think there's any Medina de Gemara. I don't think there's anything. There is a minig. Some people will do all kinds of things. Some people leave a candle in there. But they're not Medina de Gemara, and frankly, I would not recommend it. 20. What are the gedolim for Shemus burial? Is a person supposed to go through a magazine or newspaper, go page by page? Doesn't seem realistic. Is a person does not go through each page and just puts the entire magazine? Is the chevra could include that Shemus with a mace? Does it include a lot of nonsense? Is that proper? Of course it's not proper. The question is, what do you do? So it seems to me we can have rely upon a chiddush of Yitzchak Chana. Rabbi Yashin quotes it in Kovetz Shuvus as being something to take into consideration, that whatever is made for one-time use, such as a magazine or newspaper, you know, they say yesterday's newspaper is wraps today's fish, and is not intended to be kept for a long time, so then there would be no, even if it would be a Torah journal, it happens by, you know, these Torah pieces you get in all the shuls, they give it a just one page, all it is Torah, Kula Torah. So there I would say you should try to put it to Shemitz, but if for some reason it can't be done, Rabbi Yitzchak Chana would be making, Rabbi Yashiv quotes it as being a possibility. Even if you don't want to rely upon that as such, it seems to me, you're talking about a newspaper or a magazine, and the Torah is completely secondary. You know, they put in a token page of Torah to kasher it. It seems to me that that, in combination with the biblical Chana Svara, would be enough to just put it away without having to put it into Shemus. If it could be recycled, it would be better. Wrapped in plastic, it would be better. I do not believe that we should be burying nonsense next to a mace. If it's 90+% nonsense and a small minority of Torah, that's not appropriate. The story, however, is told of the Beis Halevi, that he used to subscribe to a magazine of the Maskilim, so what's going on with their all the kinds of plans they had to undo the religious atmosphere. And then there were Maskilim who were a little bit observant. They put in a page of Torah, and he canceled the subscription. So they asked him, Rebbe, we put in Torah, you canceled the subscription? So he said, if you know where I read this, you know why I canceled the subscription. We spoke about it in one of the previous shiurim. That may not be so either. If you have a magazine which is full of advertisements and current events, they have one little page of Torah, so a person's in the bathroom, that page should be covered. The rest can be brought into the bathroom. The question, sometimes they can take it out of the bathroom. But that's for a different time also. So I believe, therefore, that it's not realistic to cut out page by page. That's really impossible. To put the whole thing at the Shemus is probably not proper. And therefore, given this reality, I think we'd be well advised to rely on a combination of the Rabbi Yitzchak Chachanan's kula that's meant for temporary use, and the fact that it's butl in the vast majority, which includes nonsense and other things, and therefore does not have to be buried. Thank you very much. I apologize for the brief pause in my shiur.
Rabbi, we thank you very much, and we thank the Rabban for being on the call. We hope to be able to be in contact with the Rabbi in the near future. Thank you.
Call to.
Bye. Bye-bye.